All right, we're with the filmmaking team of The Mermaid, Sudabe, who is the director and writer, and we have Sean, who is the producer and co-editor, correct? So The Mermaid is a feature film, psychological drama. Is that maybe able is that a correct genre to describe it?
Yes, I psychological horror, I would say.
Psychological horror. Yeah, it is kind of the horror kind of creeps up on you in a sense.
Yeah, it's we have different kind of psychological horror. Yeah.
So tell me about this feature film. Like, what kind of prompted you to write the script? Like, going way back, what was your initial kind of, how did you get the idea for this script? Like, what was the process?
So basically, it was based on a short story by my longtime collaborator, Naghmah Samini. And the short story was a drama and set on the shores of the Caspian Sea, based on the Iranian family dealing with their fractured relationship with an unknown beauty or unknown presence of a person. And as they're dealing with that, but I found it's a concept and its theme of repression, alienation, and everything that we see here as an immigrant here in the US or in some other countries as well resonant. So I try to adapt it to an American story and change it. And with the help of Naghmah Samini herself, we rewrote the story and changed it to a kind of different kind of a story, a psychological horror, and added some elements of trauma, repression, emotional abuse, as we develop the whole script from the shortest story to the whole script and the longer script.
So quick segue. For some reason, I wanted to get my post-it out because I'm looking over your shoulder and you have like hundreds of post-its. Is
Yeah,
that like a
it's a
bucket?
beat it's a beat sheet for the mermaid as well. So basically it was the production office for the mermaid as I was working on the mermaid. I had all the scenes here and I was talking to my team, the crew, the production crew, and my cinematographer as well, based on these notes. So basically, these are the scenes of the mermaid.
So you're in like in the post-production room, I guess, how the magic happens.
Yeah, basically these are the production notes, but the post-production was happening in Sean's office in Los Angeles. The production was in Syracuse, New York, and the post-production was fully in Los Angeles where Sean is. I'm in Syracuse and Sean is in Los Angeles.
Well, I'm from Niagara Falls originally, so I know Syracuse very well.
Oh
So
yeah. So we're close. So and my film was in your horror film underground horror film festival that won the best horror director from the audience. And then I would say because it was an indie film and we faced a lot of situation, a lot of difficulties during the production. I was struggling with the post-production and shaping the story and shape the full film during the post-production. And that's why, with the help of Sean and his team, his post-production team, because I'm basically from Los Angeles. I came from Los Angeles to here and I have all my connection and network in Los Angeles. I went back to Los Angeles and we, with 3 hours of rough cut to Sean to get help and to reconstruct the film again. And we made the film in post-production, reshape the story,
that's
that he
amazing.
can tell you a little bit more about how we came up with the newest story based on the footage that we had.
So let me ask Sean then. So then that's a great story. A lot of people, that needs to happen. A lot of people, that there's a certain bravery that what you did to do that. But when Sean, when were you first introduced to the mermaid? Do you remember?
Sudaba, I had actually done a guest lecture in Sudaba's class at Syracuse because she's a teacher as well. Through a mutual friend who's another producer who I'd worked with before. And I just could tell we kind of spoke the same language, and Sudaba really, her she's a real student of cinema and of, particularly like, Tarkovsky and Bergman and
You can
all those
see a
kinds of
lot of
films.
Bergman in this film. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, so we just, we kind of, spoke the same language, and she called me and was like, I've shot this film and I have a 3-hour cut and I want to kind of I need another voice in the process to kind of figure out how to find the to kind of work on the final rewrite, which is what ends up being the post-production process. And we it was, I mean, it was a joy to work with Sudaba, and she had such an open heart to kind of being able to experiment and to try different things and to really find the get the pacing just right. And and it was, yeah, and I'm really proud of the result.
Yeah, I usually don't have open heart to change up the movie, but I had a full belief and trust in Sean's vision, and we were fully aligned in perspective to the film, and the vision that we had were fully aligned as well.
So what kind of prompted you to kind of make this decision? You had this 3-hour cut. Were you were you at like a creative block or like a film? Like what was the prompting?
Yeah, I wanted a pair of fresh eyes, and I wanted somebody to see it from outside because I was the only the creator of the film, and I wanted somebody to see it from outside because the film is very unconventional, very surreal, very artistic, very experimental. I wanted the film to resonate with a broad audience as well. So I didn't want the film to be fully alienated and only for a specific audience. So I wanted the broad audience to engage with film and watch the film and resonate with the film as well. And I knew that Sean had done a range of the film, from independent film and mainstream movies, TV shows, and he has eyes for both films, both independent films and mainstream movies. And I knew that if he knows what I want, he can help with that, and he can see the film from outside. And especially because I was not able to shoot some of the scenes that required for the film because of the budget constraint and because of the some unforeseen circumstances during the production, I was behind the schedule. So I couldn't finish the film. I couldn't finish especially the final scenes of the film. So the Sean was able to help me seeing the film without a script and only through the footage.
Yeah.
So we came up with a new structure based on the dream and memory and through the main character's eyes, and only reconstruct it in a way that people follow her journey and resonate with her memory, resonate with her experience and mental state, and at the same time enjoy the process and enjoy the journey and enjoy what they're watching, and put some jump scare here and there to follow the genre a little bit as well. And with the music and all the elements of horror films, have a joyful experience as well.
That's
Yeah.
a really cool story. Go ahead. John, do you want to say
Yeah,
something?
I was just saying, and discovering Sudaba and I together, really the pacing and how much of the story to tell and what kind of questions to ask, so that, really we wanted the audience to keep, to really be engaged and involved in figuring out what the meaning of all these things were. And then also giving you space to kind of reflect and be able to, interpolate like what you just saw. And I think that, balance of, asking questions and then giving the audience space to kind of soak it in and figure it out. And kind of you get deeper and deeper into the, as things turn into dream and reality, and you don't really know what, where you are as an
What
audience.
is reality, right?
Yeah,
Like, yeah.
exactly.
As
Yeah,
you get away
especially
from the
because
film.
the first cut was 3 hours, and I had to get rid of some of the scenes, and it was hard for me as a director to get rid of some of the scenes, and I wanted Sean to help, and Sean was sometimes like, okay, we should get rid of this, we should cut them out, and I was like, no, and then I was like, okay, I'll leave the room and you do it, and I And see it again.
It's like a cliche, but it's like you're like killing your baby, a little bit of your baby, right? Like it's like you're.
Yeah, but you create new babies.
Yeah. No, exactly. But it's serving the, you have to serve the story. That's the number one goal.
Exactly. And the whole basically the as Sean mentioned, the whole pace served the story as well. And we had a better pace. And with even now the film is long is 145 1 hour and 45 minutes, 140 minutes. But no, 104 minutes, right?
So, yeah, an hour and 45 minutes. Or an hour, like our 105 minutes to be, yeah, either one.
It's long, it's still long.
So, but that's the tone, right? Like the tone is at the beginning, we're like, where are, like, what's reality? What's like the point of view is always kind of come from a strange point of view. So where are we? What's going on? I gotta ask, did you always intend it to be black and white? Was that always your intention?
Yeah, sure. So it's basically before the production, during the pre-production, I decided to make it black and white to be aligned with the character's mental state, especially because she's experiencing trauma and PTSD, and it's aligned both with the aesthetic of the film and psychological aspects of the film. As a person who's experiencing trauma, a lot of people who are experiencing trauma see the world black and white. And I wanted to put immersive viewers in this story and in the world of Daria. So they see the world through Daria's eyes. So I wanted to emphasize that and also create a haunting environment and haunting claustrophobic environment to serve the story as well, especially this environment, upstate New York. You've been here and you know, upstate New York gives you this potential to work around these locations. So I thought actually served the story, served the character, served the aesthetic of the film and all of that. So both aesthetically and conceptually, I decided to make it black, and especially because I didn't have anybody to force me for the distribution. From usually in other films, when I have investors to just sometimes they force you for creative decisions, or they worry, they're concerned about distribution. You don't have the freedom to. Change make this decision of black and white or color. And I always wanted to make a black and white film.
Well, you
So,
did, and it's great. It's really well shot. It's a really well photographed film. Nice, some really interesting direction too. Like a lot, you could tell there's a lot of long shots. I'm curious about that process because you had a 3-hour cut, and I'm assuming that there's some long shots in the film that, you know, are hard to cut, right? Because you.
Really, it'd be really beautiful shots. And I'm very particular about shot design. I'm a very control freak, a director. I'm one of those that I try to be very intentional about every little thing in the frame and shot. And I usually go on sets with my shot design, my overhead diagram, my storyboard, and everything. I discussed that beforehand with my cinematographers, and I had everything here, and I had on my laptop, my iPads, and on the paper, and we discussed everything together. But he's an amazing cinematographer as well, and he knows photography and cinematography really well, and he helped with visualization of my idea to bring it to the actuality and vision. So basically, the execution was great as well. I had this on the paper, and he helped with execution as well, especially long takes and deep staging that I had, and a mise-en-scène and deep staging and deep staging blocking that I had intended for this film was really hard to execute. That's why we went behind the schedule. We fell behind the schedule, but I'm really happy with the result, with especially with the cinematography as well.
Did you have some focus issues? It's like you could see a lot of focusing.
We had focus issues as well, especially because of the pace of the shoot.
Yes,
Had to shoot.
the post-pulse color had to be on their A game making this film.
We had to shoot in the production was 2 weeks. 2 weeks a week. So
Wow,
we
okay.
shot them. Yeah, whole feature film, and just imagine 3 hours cut in 2 weeks. And during the 2 weeks, we face a lot of rain in upstate New York, and drifting a smoke, fire smoke from Canada here, and a lot of things interrupted our shoot, and we fell behind the schedule. We kept falling behind the schedule, and we had to run, and we had a lot of run and gun. But even though with this run and gun shoot, and sometimes we had only one or two takes, not more than that, and it kind of limited our choices during the editing as well. I'm impressed by the work that Sean did during the editing, and we did the best with whatever we had.
I'm curious, Sean. So did you want you got you saw the 3 hour cut? Did you want to go back and see all the footage?
I mean, I looked, I mean, I looked at a lot. I mean, I knew there were certain scenes that needed to come down. And I mean, I went through pretty much all the footage by the end of it for sure. But like, with the limited footage, each decision and each cut becomes that much more complex. It's almost like, the more coverage you have sometimes, the like more options you have and the easier it is to kind of put things together. And so, it became, each edit we had to get just right to really make it sing. And it was but yeah, I always immerse myself in all the dailies and the different performances and everything. I mean, this was especially in something like this, which is so delicate and character driven.
So what's the process then? Do you like start writing a new script? Like you said, you didn't really like, she kind of referenced that you didn't read the script.
I did. I mean, I did read the initial script, but I tried to, as an editor, I try to ignore everything. I try to ignore, I try to just kind of look at it with a fresh mind before I kind of go, but my first instinct is I like to watch all the dailies and kind of, keep Sudoba out of my head a little bit, keep the script out of my head a little bit, and just concentrate on the puzzle pieces that we have, and to think about, the meaning it had to me. And then I'll go back and discuss with Sudoba and discuss, look at the script and stuff. But I like those initial instincts. I think a lot of times really help you be able to see, what the strengths are and what things to kind of highlight, within the story. Because I think whenever you're constructing anything, there's weaknesses. Whether you're making The Godfather, you're making this, there's always going to be weaknesses in the story and in the performances and in the, how you put this together. And I think it's our job as filmmakers to kind of, figure out the best version of the story in the final, in this final kind of rewrite process. And I think, it's wonderful when you have a collaborator that's willing to, listen to all your ideas and kind of that's also willing to be her own critic, and be able to say, like, I'm not just a genius who everything I touch is gold, but we have to figure out what to, how to really make this shine and make, pull out the best moments. So.
Reshoots were out of the question, right? Like you had to work with the footage you had.
I mean, I think reshoots, even on the biggest budget things, are always, like, most of the time are out of the question until you absolutely have to, right? It's sort of like you have to exhaust all the options. And you also there's also beautiful things that come out of that creative process of figuring out, well, these are the pieces we have. What if we made this with it? Or what if we changed this? Or what if this new thing came out of it? And there's a kind of beautiful organic process that comes out of, and I think as an editor, those things are really rewarding to cut, because you kind of just created something new that never lived before. It's like, it's a new bit of the story and a new way to tell it. And that, sometimes even the things that you didn't conceive of exactly like that, there's a beauty in that newness and creating that new thing that does add to the story. So
Sudhabed, can I ask, like, what is the fundamental difference of the film now? Like, is it because it was because you have different kind of stocks, right? Like I'm just using general terms, but film stocks and like you kind of like moving back and forth, shifting gears. Was that always in the script?
I don't see any fundamental difference. I would say the ending, probably the ending was different, just a little bit, because we were not able to shoot the ending scenes as I described in the script. But there is a different kind of ambiguous, more poetic ending right now, and which is more aligned with characters' fragmented memory, and I'm happier with that. But in general, the structure is more or less something that I had in my mind because I wanted this modern, non-linear, unconventional structure which follows a character's journey. But probably Sean gave me this courage to follow it because I wasn't sure if I should do this that drastically and so experimental, so unconventional. And Sean gave me this courage to do this and follow this, and we executed this together.
And I think it would have only been possible too. I mean, Sudaba is very particular in her view of things. And I think in a lot of other situations, you have producers and you have all these other people that get in the mix and you have all these other voices. And I feel honored that Sudaba trusted me to let, because she's not somebody who's going to listen to those other voices normally. And it's such a poetic, personal project. And I mean, there's she has a lot of her own history and trauma tied up into it. And I think that it was just a beautiful to be let into that process. And then also that Sudaba fought to keep it a poem, and to keep it not in this kind of mental poetic state that isn't really done in cinema these days. It is much more a throwback to the filmmakers of like Bergman and Tarkovsky and some of these filmmakers that really took a lot of these risks, the French New Wave, all this kinds of stuff that like people aren't really willing to do now because of the commercialism of modern cinema. It's like you can't do that, and Sudaba did
The
it.
bar is very thin. It's hard to take risks now, right? So, and it makes a lot of sense what you just said. I love the thematic because it stays it throughout, right? It's about trauma, the aftermath of trauma. Like I think that I personally related to it 100%, right? And basically, like culturally or wherever you like, it's a lot of it's a cultural thing where you just it gets dismissed. It gets removed from the conversation, right? Like you're just supposed to move on like that and kind of like and pretend it doesn't happen, right? And I love the concept of this person kind of being the like she's in this in this kind of like space that she doesn't know, right? And in as the audience we're in the same space, right? So as what she's observing this kind of weird family, I'm allowed to say that. She's doing it as well, so we're watching it through her eyes, right? So it's a great concept. So while you're doing these risky kind of storytelling techniques, there's a familiarity to it at the same time. That makes sense.
Yeah, and it's kind of aligned with my previous work as well. Polaris was a story of a person who's experiencing trauma and a journalist who's experiencing PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, an Iranian-American journalist who's experiencing this. So this is a common theme that I'm following in my other work as well. So this is something that I feel committed to pursue and follow in different style and different theme.
So I just want to ask you about the I want to kind of talk about the casting in a second, but the location is like a whole, it's like a cast in itself. We're like the house, and you kind of had these all these long establishing shots from the couch and looking at the kitchen. It was there's some a lot of sequences like that. Where did you kind of shoot this? Where did you shoot the film?
Syracuse, New York, because Originally, I wanted to shoot it in Greece, and I scouted location in Greece because I'm a fan of Theo Angelopoulos and his films. And I scouted some location over there, and even I spoke with some production partners over there to work over there. But because of the language barriers, I stopped pursuing those opportunities. So here I found it the overcast weather and this feeling of upstate New York. I found it very close to my vision, so I decided to do this here. And then it was hard to find this house because the houses were supposed to be very isolated, next to the water, the beach house or shore house or lake house, but it's still isolated. It was really hard, but one of the crew members helped me with finding this house, these two houses. One of them modern and clean and upscale, and the other one kind of damaged, old, and creepy, to use it as an old house that she sees ghosts and communicate with the ghosts of her sister. And it kind of created scenes of like ghosts, Hitchcock ghosts. Psycho. And then these locations actually, as you mentioned, helped with the deep staging that I had in my mind, the blocking that I had in my mind for film as well. And then the windows and the working through the windows and all the shots that we had, frame in frame and frame within frames and distance shot and long takes and long shots that I had. We designed it with my cinematographer, and when we went there, we decided to get a lot of scenes through the windows to create this frame within frame, to create this restrained and confined situation and trapped situations for the characters through these windows and seeing them, and the sense of being watched, because I wanted this character to feel that she's always under a scrutiny. And the feeling of the sense of being watched through the windows and glasses and the camcorder as well, that enforces a feeling of being watched as well.
And then talk to me about the cast. Where did you do a casting call to find everybody?
For some of actually, I had a casting call, but I ended up casting some of the people that I knew. The Mermaid was one of my students in Syracuse University that I
Oh.
knew from the past, and she was
Natalie, right?
very.
Sorry, is it Natalie, right? The
She's
mermaid?
Italian, yeah, she's Italian, but I noticed that she's very talented. She knows several different languages, and we came up with this language together for the mermaid, and she created this language with mixing and blending several different languages: Chinese, Mandarin, Latino, Italian, English, and several different languages, some of them. And we gave it some direction throughout the production to make it meaningful as well. And even the song that she's singing throughout the film, we created that together as well. So even though I auditioned several different actors for this role, I ended up casting her because she performed it really well, and she had a great audition. For the other actors, I knew them
Sure,
from.
but before you get to the other actors, because she's your film, right? Like you're putting a lot of trust in her to pull this performance off.
I auditioned her, and she beat everybody as soon
Nice.
as. Yeah, as soon as I auditioned her, I had another associate producer at the time. He was helping me with audition, and when we auditioned everybody, and then we auditioned Natalie, we were both like, "Wow, she's the one that we were looking for," and she did a great job even through that, because at the time she was in Los Angeles, and she's an actress, she's pursuing acting professionally, and now she's a professional actor. But I knew her back in 3 4 years ago when she was my student in Syracuse University,
Gotcha.
and I had her in my mind for this role as well.
Gotcha. And then the other act, like the person who played the mom is fantastic. Like, the
Yeah.
casting.
She's one of the co-writers as well. She was my business partner,
Oh,
and
okay.
I knew her when I was auditioning. She actually played in some other movies as well, some bit parts and small parts. When Ori was auditioning other actors, she told me, "Why don't you audition me as well?" So I try to show you how I can perform this, and I noticed that she can do it really well. And so I decided to cast her. It's again because of the production conditions and the budget conditions. I had to stick with the people that I knew to be more flexible with the schedule, with the budget, with the production issues and everything. So, and then with Daria, the main character, who's the Iranian American main character, she was a friend of mine, and I had auditioned her for another project that kind of we postponed the project to later, and then I decided to cast her for this project. She was familiar with both languages, and she did a great job in the audition as well. And Ray's character, who's great as well. Ray's is Tom Miller is one of my colleagues in Syracuse University who's teaching acting, and he's a stage actor. He's a stage actor. He's a theater actor. And I had seen his performance in both on a stage and in other movies. So I decided to cast him for that role, and I'm very proud of all of the performances, especially the main characters. Yeah.
And so lastly, I want to ask you about the sound design, which is fantastic. Like, so talk to me. Like, I don't know if Sean was involved in that. Like, what was the process of doing the sound
Yeah, Sean, why don't you talk about me speaking with Royan?
design? So yeah, actually, this is a very family affair, the whole thing. So my neighbor around the corner is a sound designer and
Is something
sound.
moving on your couch? Is that an animal, I hope?
Yeah, there's a dog back there.
Okay, cool. Go ahead, go
yeah,
ahead.
so yeah, Ryan and he so yeah, I called him over. He walked up the street and came over and saw what we were doing, and we kind of discussed what we had designed. But Sudaba and I during post, I mean definitely during the edit, especially these days, and with things that are this particular, I think a lot of it we needed to temp out as close as we could, so that Ryan really had a template for what we needed to do. And then yeah, he did some pre-mix work, and we went back and forth a lot on these. It's such a subtle little a very delicate and subjective little moments that like have to be just right. Like the I remember, and actually Ryan's kids and my daughter were in the soundtrack a little bit, and the whispering and the and then actually my neighbor across the street, who's an Australian guy, did the voice of the nature video. He's got this Australian brogue, so we ended up getting him. But yeah, Ryan had a connections at a really beautiful facility, so we recorded all the ADR there, and yeah, so but a lot, I mean it was very delicate, and I think Sudaba was pulling her hair out a little bit as we were trying to get this just right, because it's the kind of thing, like if those whispers aren't right, it all of a sudden becomes very goofy.
Totally.
And it's like in like a lot of those little moments, it's like, yeah, if they're not done just so, it's like, so yeah, but it was a collaborative process, but it was also, difficult to get right. So that's what.
Actually, part of the difficulty was because I'm based in Syracuse, and I was in Los Angeles for a few months, and I stayed for a few months, but I had to come back here for my teaching, and I was in touch with the post-production team remotely, and I was listening to the sound design or music, and our music guy, our composer, who's an amazing composer, Paul Christo, is in Oklahoma, and we had all these remote collaboration with the post-production team, and so it makes it just a little bit difficult to communicate remotely, but we actually everything came together eventually, and I'm happy with the results of everything. But as Sean mentioned, because we had everything temped out during the editing, and we had the temp sound and music, and they kind of knew what we want as a final vision for the film, it kind of made it easier for everybody.
But I would also add that something like this, in the same way that you have these beautiful tableau shots that move just so, like deciding where to make those edits becomes a very difficult task. The same thing, I mean, this film doesn't have a ton of music. It's not, it's very, we chose specific points to add that, but as a result too, the rest of it, it's very naked. Like so many films these days have like music wall to wall, and then your mix doesn't have to be as specific, but you can hear every single sound and every little thing. So if it's not right, it doesn't, and all those sounds and everything are so emotional, become more powerful and more emotional when you design something like that,
It's a
like this.
great job. It's a really nice, it's a really solid sound design, nicely photographed, like we talked about before. But yeah, it's all about that tone, finding, making sure that the audience doesn't remove itself, right? Like subconsciously from the film. Everything's got to be real. Everybody's got to, it's got all got to stay in reality. I'm being kind of like cliche about it, but it's like very difficult to do, as you describe, right? So, because as you said, one false, like one over the top voice, it takes you, takes the audience out of the film, right? So.
Yeah, the
Exactly.
point is, yeah, everything is should be blended together in a way to immerse the audience into the story and not pull them from the story.
Exactly. So before we leave, guys, we always ask people like what the key question, what film they watch the most times in your life. Sudaben, you answered the question in the blog interview. Do you remember what you answered?
I'm not sure what I answered because there are a lot of movies that I watched a lot of times, but I can now I can tell Persona because we just mentioned
You
Angry
said
Birds.
Persona, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like you're watching the film. It's like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. That's your
Yeah,
answer.
yeah, yeah. You watched The Mermaid, yeah. And
Yeah.
the poster, look at the
Yeah.
poster.
And so, Sean, do you have an answer to that question?
I mean, I would say the one I saw in the theater the most times was The Royal Tenenbaums,
Okay.
but Stalker is probably Tarkovsky's Stalker is probably the one I've seen the most. Like I revisit that film a lot because it's so profound and metaphysical, and I just find it interesting, and I can kind of rewatch bits of it and get something from the writing in particular.
And what? How many times did you see Royal Tenenbaums in the theater?
Six or something,
As yeah.
six and seven times, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it didn't have a long run, I don't think at that time. I think they were
Oh.
shorter runs, but it was, yeah, I loved that film when it came
Wow.
out.
Well, it was you? I remember when I watched it in the theater too, like the opening weekend, and it was like that's an interesting, like I never like because he's kind of done different versions of that film, like the way his style is. But I remember like thinking like, wow, that's such a amazing film in so many ways, right? Like
At
it.
the time, it was very bold. Yeah,
Yeah, it
and then
was very
I was like
bold.
obsessed with it. I remember I got my grandmother to watch it though, and I shouldn't. She was like, yeah, my uncle had committed suicide, so she was like, I didn't realize I totally traumatized her by watching that film because I thought it was just brilliant and had like, I mean, I love films that, it's got suicide, it's got the darkness,
Yeah.
it's got real darkness to it, but it also has these comedic beats. And I mean, I love like the mise en scène, like the use of like props and stuff. Like I mean, I always think of the picture on the wall behind Owen Wilson of the guy on the ATV, like there's
Yeah. Well,
a
yeah.
behind him, or like these little things are like these details. I just like the specificity of it.
Because in a lot of ways, it's a film about trauma too, right? Like,
Exactly.
And Gene Hackman, who just passed away recently, like he's brilliant in that film. Like he's just so good. And I don't know if you heard the story before, but Wes Anderson talks about shooting. They were at like, where where the Statue of Liberty is in that little area there in New York City, and they deliberately didn't shoot the Statue of Liberty. Because he wants to make it like we don't know where we are, but we know we're in New York, but we don't want to say we're in New York. And Hackman was like arguing with him and fighting with him, like, well, I don't understand why we're here then. And he didn't understand like what the tone was. And he's like screaming with him, like, show the Statue of Liberty. And Wes Anderson is like, no, I like, and they had this huge argument on set, the two of them.
I've heard some horror stories about Gene Hackman. He's a brilliant actor, but I don't think he was
No.
the
Well, I don't,
easiest
yeah, like a lot of the great ones aren't, right? So.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, well, I think the film's fantastic. I hope it does well. I wish it the best of success. Like I said, nicely bold symptom. Thank you for sharing that story about like the collaboration and bringing Sean on Sudaba. It's a really great story, and a lot of filmmakers need to do that. It's about kind of like swallowing your ego and like looking for guidance or help and like collaborate. Collaboration is the best word, but sometimes you need that, right? And then it kind of opens up the creative oceans that are sticking in your brain, right? So.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's totally true. Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk again soon, either together again or individually. And like I said, I wish you guys the best of success.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having us, and thank you for your festival.
Thank you.